This is Through the Jump Gate, a science fiction discussion podcast.
Episode 25.
Hosted by Kosh and Raven.
And we're back already.
Are we?
Yes, for the second half.
All right.
Of our science episode. But briefly, before we get back into the discussion between you and Dr. Rachel about actual science stuff, we're going to do a quick mini feature before I get out of your way.
Dr. Rachel's here?
Dr. Rachel's here.
Is she in somebody's pocket?
She's literally sitting 3 feet behind you.
Pocket dimension. Clever.
So this week's mini feature, here we go. This is going to take not very long. I just want to make a couple notes to our listeners. That's going to be this week's mini feature. First off, as usual, as I tend to say in the blog post for each episode, I apologize that our episodes take so long to come out. It is my fault and my fault only.
Whew, here for a moment there, I thought it was mine.
Yeah, not at all.
Oh, excellent.
It's your fault that the episodes take so long to record.
It's my fault
they take so long to get edited and released. So what I'm going to try to do in order to get these episodes out to people a little bit sooner, just to boil it down to the essentials, I'm going to be making some behind-the-scenes changes to the editing process, so hopefully it won't take quite as long to get these finished and posted onto the blog. What that's going to mean for the listeners is that you're probably going to notice fewer fun, humorous, atmospheric sound drops.
Shut up.
Let's have sex.
Nobody told me this involved having sex with an alien.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
Okay, that's just gross.
And after a while, you know, that really starts to annoy me.
And more serious, less fun sound drops.
And more just us doing the discussion back and forth. Now, if we're referencing a sound clip that the people need to hear, that, of course, will go in there. But the fun stuff, like the under music and the quotes from our episode where we talk about The Flash, I had Worf jump in and say something at some point.
Nice legs.
Probably a little less of that and a little bit more just the sound clips that we need for people to know what we're talking about and maybe some atmospheric music behind it occasionally.
Listeners, be sure to tune in and watch Worf cry. You don't see Klingons cry very often, but that will be one of them. He's been cut.
Yep.
Going to break his wee little Klingon heart. Actually, hearts is the redundant system. But that's more detail than we really need to get into at this moment.
So hopefully these episodes will be getting out to you a little bit sooner. As a way of apology for my consistently taking so long for these episodes to come out, we are going to be adding some additional content. Almost an extra episode every, hopefully, week. If I can get back onto a weekly schedule. As you will have noticed, after last week's episode, the first half of our science talk, it was followed up soon afterward by another like sub episode, which was just us having discussions,
Where I get a lot angrier.
having a discussion with just the microphone is still on, but we are talking amongst ourselves. We're going to be doing that after most, if not all, the episodes from here on out. It's just going to be casual, loose conversation, whatever we couldn't get to in the main episode, we are going to discuss in this after show, and we are going to be calling this after show the Gravity Well.
So now, here I plan on talking less about stuff in, afterwards involving the show and more about your Easter chocolate.
Well, we could be doing, Easter chocolate. I'm going to have some of that right now. So we're going to be...
Hence why it was on my mind.
Whatever convert... Hold on.
This show brought to you by...
So, whatever conversation happens to fall into the gravity well after the recording, that's what you're going to get. It'll be uncut. It'll be unedited. Excuse me.
By Quark's Chocolate, the greatest chocolate on all of the space stations nearest you.
That was delicious chocolate. It's going to be unedited, uncut. We're just going to put the conversation out for you, and that will normally be released, I would say, 2 to 3 days after the main episode was released.
All negative comments should be addressed to Tim Taylor at...
Care of Tool Time. Good reference. I like that. check out Home Improvement. It's a classic. What, ABC?
That's a good question, actually. I don't remember who put that out.
It's not really a good question. It's a terrible question because nobody cares. That's television.
No, that is. That's an interesting trivia thing. You rarely ask what stations things originally aired on, like the original Next Gen or the original versus Next Gen Star Trek.
Hey, Dr. Rachel, he thinks this is an interesting question. You believe that? He actually thinks it's interesting. Oh, the microphone is still.
Sorry, I was thinking about your mom.
Hey, we said we weren't going to be doing that anymore.
No, I said I wouldn't be doing it as much.
So that's what's going to be happening, folks. I'm going to try to get these edited faster, and to make up for my slowness, we'll be adding the Gravity Well coming a few days after each episode.
I think of it as fine detail. You know, that which sets apart just a bookcase to a work of art.
I don't know about you, but the episodes that I'm putting out are not worth 1 month's wait between episodes.
I hang on every word. Okay, maybe I should mention that people on Meeting Me are usually introduced to me. This is our friend Raven. First, Raven lies. Second of all, Raven says inappropriate things. I'm sure you've noticed at least one of those things by now.
Raven also likes the sound of his own voice.
Nuh-uh. I like the sound of your mom's voice.
So, luckily, he does enjoy the sound of his own voice, which is good because this is going to bring us to the end of the mini feature. I've said my piece. I'm going to step aside, and for real this time, I'm going to be out of the conversation unless I have something really interesting that I want to say.
So basically, you're not going to comment unless you want to comment.
Pretty much. But we're getting into part two of the discussion for this episode, for this half of the science discussion. This is going to be made up more of questions that we're going to lob at Dr. Rachel, try to make her feel awkward and uncomfortable and flustered for an answer, and then we're just going to sit here silently while she comes up with something to say.
And now we're pleased to bring you our feature presentation.
And we're back. Listen to those dulcet tones that I obviously love to listen to. So, Dr. Rachel's back. See? Look.
Hello.
Oh, wait, you can't see. We're on internet radio. Well, in any case, so we thought we'd begin with who gets a pass? Who gets a pass, Dr. Rachel, on science fiction?
Star Trek always seems to get a pass.
And why is this?
I don't remember.
We were talking about it before. Miracle Exception. Both of us agreed that especially a single miracle exception, you don't have to explain why it works. Single. It just does.
It's not a single exception.
Well, usually per episode. But things like the Heisenberg device,
it's a lot of episodes. Transport. It's a lot of miracle exceptions.
But they at least, they're within a realm. Like, you know, why do the lightsabers work? They just do. We don't know why. Okay, miracle exception.
Lightsabers on Star Trek?
That would be really cool. I would really want to see that. I would want a lightsaber even worse than I do now.
Uh-huh.
I've been trying to design it. I haven't come up with anything yet.
When you do, let me know.
You'll become a Jedi with me. You'll become my Jedi slave princess.
Womp womp.
See, right now we need a sound drop with Jabba the Hutt, but we're not doing those anymore. No, one of the things we have written down is the Synthahol. Why?
Synthahol was synthetically created alternative to alcohol.
Right.
A drink that tastes like alcohol.
But has none of the effects.
Right, it doesn't actually get you drunk. And yes, the first thing we wondered was, why on earth would you want to make that?
It gets you drunk.
What do you mean it gets you drunk?
It does.
Okay, Miles O'Brien specifically said it doesn't. And I'm going to take his word for it.
If you let it get you drunk, you'll get drunk.
So in other words, if you believe you'll get drunk, the whole placebo effect.
Synthahol will get you drunk, but if you need to sober up, you can. Very quickly. At will. This might be Apocrypha. This might be in the expanded universe.
This might also be one of the things that they did later, because I seem to recall the episode, and I can't remember the name of it. I do remember the actress, the main actress. It was the only episode she was in. She had a very short career, which is unfortunate because she was very good in it. Where they picked up a whole bunch of refugees from a planet that was about to just be exploded. It goes splody and die, but they were Federation citizens, so we can interfere, as opposed to the Prime Directive, where if you don't have membership, I'm sorry, we'll just let you die. Sorry, little rant there. But basically, they were all Scotch-Irish in their descent, and, well, you can make Synthahol. This doesn't have any kick, so...
It has no bite.
Yeah, it has no bite, no kick, but it doesn't do anything.
So wait. Is it alcohol that gets you drunk that doesn't actually taste like alcohol?
No, it tastes
right. Or is it a
drink
that tastes like alcohol and doesn't get you drunk?
Let Dr. Raymond back up on there. It didn't. That was one of the critiques, is it didn't quite taste right, because as we found out, synthesized food from the replicator doesn't quite taste like the real thing. It's close. But it's sort of like, you know, White Castle burgers... and real meat.
Ew.
You know, what actually, White Castle is delicious.
White Castle is not food.
It's steamed. That's the only difference.
That's disgusting.
Okay, it's grade D. I'll admit that as well. But it's steamed.
I don't want my burger cooked with hot water.
Well, generally no, but it's delicious. It's White Castle. It's the only exception.
And we digress.
Synthahol tastes wrong. It tastes off. To people who are used to real alcohol.
Okay.
Which, if all you've had is Synthahol, then it tastes fine.
And then, who was it? Was it Worf or Data that showed them how to make real alcohol?
It was Worf.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He gave them a Klingon drink known as...
Talut.
Oh, he didn't give them blood wine.
No, no.
Oh, I'd have given them that.
This Klingon drink was...
You want to be a real man? Drink this.
it was smoking. You could see the vapors roiling off the top of it.
Oh, so we had another opportunity to drop some dry ice into the drink.
Exactly.
Into the Kool-Aid. Mmm. Oh, that's got quite a kick to it, laddie. Yeah, it is. If you drink if you suck up the bit of dry ice that's floating around there.
The sound drop from that show, the sound of that man, Mr. Odell,
yeah,
drinking that drink, will be in the show right here.
Oh, that's what I call a wee drop of the creature.
Because you notice that I didn't waste any time jumping into the episode that I said I was staying out of. I'm going back over here to the other side of the couch.
So I'm still not clear on what Synthahol actually is.
It's basically a way for them to have something off duty, but never have to worry about the fact that they might be called to duty any moment.
Okay.
Well,
that kind of makes sense then.
Yeah. It's relaxing. It will relax the drinker.
If you're the sort of person that likes to drink in your off-duty time, which I'm not, so...
Well, and that's... Well, that brings us to the other one. And I just re-saw the episode. What was it? The Zartak Aperitif. Mm. We both agreed that was cool.
So, give me a description of that.
That was the one where Guinan is sitting there, and the captain's coming to ask her about, should I go away on this away mission? He doesn't realize he's coming to ask her about it. But that's pretty much what he's been summoned, for want of a better word, to 10 forward. Oh, by the way, Captain, could you come down to 10 forward? And she just has a feeling he needs to go on this away mission where he can go back in time and they do with Data's head and all that good stuff. But she's making this Zartak aperitif, and he asks, wow, what are you doing? I haven't seen anything like this since the finals in exochemistry, which in and of itself is kind of a stupid term.
I thought you were going to say something about Top Chef space or something.
Well, no, that predates Top Chef. But, exobiology makes sense. Exochemistry? What? Come on. It's chemistry. That's all it is. But, and I got to say, as a molecular...
How are you defining the prefix exo?
I'm presuming, well, the way they have it on the show, exobiology having to do with biology not of Earth. Just generally, you know, all...
Okay, well, if
species,
physics can be different on different planets, then chemistry could be different on different planets.
But it can't be in that universe, even because it's supposed to be in ours. And I'm going to have to go with Einstein on this one. God doesn't roll dice, you know? The rules apply everywhere.
Exochemistry sounded cool, so they put it in the script.
Well, yeah.
That's the only reason.
They wanted to make it sound like it was a really tough course. But in any case, as a molecular gastronomist... This one was really particularly cool because it is, in theory, possible. What they had was she's trying to make this drink, and it's just precise. And what she was doing was she was affecting the vaporization point of the liquid to be half a degree, and they didn't specify Celsius or Fahrenheit. It doesn't really matter. Half a degree lower than the body temperature of the person drinking it. So the moment it hits your tongue, it vaporizes, and you get all of that wonderful flavor, and it's everywhere that it can go. You'll get all the stuff that your tongue can actually detect, as well as everything, well, for want of a better word, goes up your nose.
Yeah, so it's kind of like drinking Verner's.
Yeah, but, you know...
in a good way.
I was going to say, with a little less of that horseradish ginger bite, where you're going, oh my God, I can't, oh my God, my nose, you know.
That actually sounds pretty cool. That sounds like a drink that I would like to try.
I know, and I'd love to try making it.
The point there is it's not very practical because, as you said, it's a half a degree lower than the body temperature of the person drinking it.
I've got an IR thermometer.
You have to re-engineer this drink for each individual customer.
Which would make it cool.
I mean, as you drink, you get warmer, so, I mean, well, that actually, every time they order, you have to...
It wouldn't be that hard necessarily because, in theory, like, for instance, you can raise the vaporization point of water by adding a few grains of salt. The solution overall, the vaporization point is a little higher. You add a little more salt, it goes a little higher. A little more salt. No, it's got obviously an upper limit. But the problem is, I can't think of anything that you'd want to drink that you could do that with.
Most of the things that vaporize at that level. The drink is going to taste slightly different each time you make it because you've got stuff in different ratios. So it's never going to be the same drink.
That's true, and that's why I think it would be kind of cool just to see if you could do it. It might taste really good, too. Sort of like Iron Brew. It
might taste like...
Yes, this show brought to you by Iron Brew. What's Iron Brew? Good question. It actually does pertain. It's a Scottish soda, actually primarily drank as a hangover cure. It's kind of like a cream soda, but it's made in these vats that have iron girders in them. Mm-hmm. It's very tasty. It outsells Coke 2-1 in Scotland. However, it's very temperature sensitive, more so than sake, actually. If you drink it hot, it's not very good. If you drink it at room temperature, it is so tasty. I've sold more of the stuff, and I wasn't even trying to sell it. People are like, wow, what's that? Iron Brew. Comes from Scotland. I get it over in New Caledonia from them in the Renaissance Fair. Really? Let me try it. Wow, that is good. Let me get some. And so they end up giving me free soda because they sell a lot more when I'm there. The point on this one is, if you drink it cold, like most Americans are wont to do with their soda, mm-hmm. it is foul. I mean, really foul. I drank, oh my God, I wanted to throw it out. Something's wrong with it. And then I let it warm up and went, oh, don't drink it cold. They weren't kidding. It's that bad. So as a temperature sensitive drink, it does kind of relate.
Well, people say that about beers and wines too, and I never.
Sake is the only one that I've noticed really tends to be like that as far as alcoholic. A roommate of mine, she tried it and she hated it, and the boyfriend that was over, he was like, "Yeah, it's not really good." Like, good. And I was like, "Wait, what are you guys drinking? Sake? Let me see the bottle." Yeah, this is a warm sake. What are you talking about? This is not a reference to the taste. It's how it's supposed to be served. So I put it in a double boiler. Brought it up to probably about 75, 80 degrees centigrade, somewhere in that range. It wasn't quite bubbling, and said, "Now here, try it now." And he went, "Oh, that is a lot different. That's really good." There are certain temperature sensitive drinks, and it does make a big difference. What were you talking about with enzymes? I remember we were talking about some show had. You know, they had some enzyme. They created this enzyme.
I don't remember what movie it was. It was something like...
That's right. It was a movie that you'd
Underworld
seen.
Or...
Yeah.
Some movie with people dressed in black pleather. And something
so,
about...
a high budget.
Yeah. you know, with supernatural, non-naturally occurring creatures in this movie. And they did what... we hate that they do by trying to explain the phenomenon with science, and they said it's an enzyme. They said it's an enzyme that causes this transition, whatever. And me, my scientist friends and I, who were sitting in the audience, looked at each other and rolled their eyes and said, blame it on an enzyme, because that's just ridiculous.
Yes, yes it is. I probably would have gotten vocal at the show. As anyone who's going to a movie with me, like Dr. Rachel has noticed, yeah, I tend to forget that I'm not at home and occasionally that these things aren't interactive. But it was it's really bad. Enzyme is so bad. That's right. Like saying, oh, we're going to turn them into a vampire by throwing bricks at them. What? It makes just as much sense.
Okay, so an enzyme is a protein, and proteins, especially enzymes, are extremely temperature sensitive, and they don't last forever. I mean, you can't just give someone an injection of an enzyme and have it change their entire body makeup. It's just, I mean...
Well, and it's basically to boil it down, and check me on this if I'm wrong. Enzymes convert one, maybe as many as five different substrates. So, say ethanol.
You're giving them a little too much credit. It's typically just one.
As many as five, because, like, for instance,
three would be a complicated enzyme.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking specifically for ethanol, and I know this because of my allergy. The enzyme for ethanol that breaks it down into ethyl aldehyde. Mm-hmm. Remember, enzymes, they're nothing more than catalysts. They simply lower that activation energy of that reaction. So basically, it can happen at room temperature more frequently than it would.
Right. Which means something that has almost no chance of happening if they're just sitting next to each other, you add the enzyme and it'll happen in a day or an hour instead of
like
a millennia.
Every science teacher in high school tries to show, this is the action of enzymes. We put in one with sucrose and it's going to break it down by the end of class. No, it's not. You're going to be waiting all day and maybe longer to get any noticeable reaction out of that.
Right.
Ethanol, I picked on that one because it also works, it's the same enzyme works on methanol and ethyl glycol, which turns them into some really horrible products like formaldehyde, which is why you don't want to drink methanol, because that's why it makes you go blind, and ethylene glycol, which turns into oxalic acid, which kills you. It's also the active ingredient in rhododendrons, spinach, yes you are indeed, getting some of it in spinach, and taro root, which is why it stings when it touches your lips and tends to kill you really quickly if you don't cook it really thoroughly. However, it's also very tasty when you're done with it. You just cook it to death. Boil it for an hour. It's yummy. Staple crop throughout the world. That's one of those ones that baffles me. How did human beings figure this out? This hurts when I eat it. Let's eat some more. Ah, he died. Complained about stinging. Maybe we shouldn't eat that. This is a reasonable logic. Well, let's try cooking it. Oh, still died. Let's cook it some more. Died a little slower. We might be onto something here. Somehow I don't think that was,
I doubt that was the
experimental process. Somehow we got there. It's one of those foodstuffs that just amazes me how we learned that if you cook it, it's safe.
Right.
Or soybeans. There's another good one.
Well, it could just be necessity. Necessity.
See, I'm going to give that one to snails. People eat snails because of necessity or a bet.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Somebody lost a bet. Or, dude, I bet you won't eat that snail. Dude, I'm going back to my ant larva. No, dude, I bet you won't eat that snail. Okay, this is loosely translated from the Chinese. But, you know, in French, they would just taunt them with this outrageous French accent, despite the fact that everyone has it. You know? But this is another example of an enzyme doing one thing.
Right.
Soybeans. If you eat them raw, go ahead, eat them raw a lot. It'll kill you eventually. Most people don't know that because they have a specific enzyme, a protease inhibitor, that stops protein breakdown. So you can't digest protein.
It lasts a little longer.
Yeah, it lasts a little while in your body. So eventually you eat enough soybeans, you're not getting any protein from any source. Hence why you will die. Right. Note all of these have singular effects. They don't code for multiple things. So an enzyme is not going to go, hey, here's this one chemical back to the 50s, and it has a miracle exception in the body. No, No, the only chemicals I know of that are like that, and you can't produce it with a single enzyme by anything that's in the human body, are nerve toxins, and they kill you quickly. Or blood agents also kill you really quickly.
Right, they don't turn you into a werewolf.
No, but it'd be cool if they did. Now, radiation, I can give that. Because if you have a cascading catastrophic change, because your body just happens to react to, say, gamma radiation in this way.
Right, because radiation is going to affect every cell of your body.
And even in the comic books, they mention Dr. Bruce Banner.
Dr. Bruce Banner, melted by gamma rays.
Miracle Exception. His cousin also had this. So, gosh, remind me, there are what, 7 total people in the Marvel Universe that have had useful adaptations from gamma radiation?
That's about right. There's certainly
I'm going
not
the
many.
Leader, Doc Samson, Hulk, She-Hulk. I forgot what the what was it? The little sidekick dude. He wasn't too bad off.
You're not talking about Rick Jones, are you?
No, Rick Jones, as I recall, got gamma radiation poisoning and died. Or almost died from that.
Almost died. He ended up doing a couple things. I think he became a superhero for a while. I don't know about Sidekick.
I remember
The Abomination.
The Abomination, I forgot about him.
Head gamma radiation, and let us not forget Red Hulk. And I believe there is a Red She-Hulk also.
I thought Red Hulk was Dr. Bruce Banner.
No.
Okay.
Spoiler warning to anyone who actually cares. Red Hulk was General Thunderbolt Ross.
Oh my God. They went there. Was Betsy... Was his daughter Red She-Hulk?
See, I cannot confirm that there is a Red She-Hulk because I have not been following the storylines. I heard that there might be one, so we should look that up later.
Getting
on.
Desperate.
So we did. We looked it up, and it turns out Raven was right. It is Betty Ross that is now Red She-Hulk in the Marvel Universe. And that's where I stopped researching, because that's where I officially lost interest.
But that could be a miracle exception, because again...
Well, not even necessarily a miracle exception, because radiation, not only is it going to affect every cell of your body, but it's going to have a lasting effect. It's going to bombard your DNA,
right,
and which is the blueprint that all the enzymes and other stuff are made from, so every cell is now sick in a different way, in a random, chaotic way.
In that case, it wouldn't necessarily be sick, it would just be... And technically, it isn't even sick, it's in a different order. If this order happens to be one of those rare few, like Dr. Bruce Banner, that works, cool. Almost everybody else, that randomization,
means
ask the people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki how many of them didn't do so good afterwards.
Right.
Which brings us actually onto viruses. I think we also found that a credible way of doing it, because it causes multiple things to happen. Look, we can make lots of substances, like we can make these two or three, and then build.
A virus shows up with its own DNA, so it's already got coding for whatever it wants.
Well, technically it's not DNA, it's RNA, but yeah. Unless I misremembered my microbiology. The DNA was too long to fit in a virus. It was RNA.
Well, the difference between DNA and RNA is not the length, it's how many strands.
Right. It would co-opt the RNA and cause that to make DNA. With the exception of AIDS. Yeah. AIDS it starts with DNA, makes RNA, and then becomes DNA.
Well,
it takes like 3 more steps.
That's because HIV is a retrovirus.
Right.
So it depends
retrovirus
on
being
the
different.
Type of virus. There are viruses.
But we'll say for the sake of argument. All the little critters like that,
viruses show up with their own genetic code.
Yes.
How about that?
And they co-opt the machinery of a cell to make it...
One virus can take over one cell, and then a virus's job is to make billions of copies of itself, which then go out and invade the other cells of your body. So once again, you're attacking the entire body.
Right. And you could, in theory, as Dr. Richard Mulligan, which I still think is hysterical... Listeners, for those of you who are not familiar with his work, Dr. Richard Mulligan, back in the 90s, realized you could take a retrovirus, strip all the genetic machinery out of it, and put your own in. So what he did was, he to make a very long story short, managed to take sickle cell anemia producing cells. He irradiated them so that they made sickle cell, not healthy blood cells, then injected them with this retrovirus, which then corrected the machinery. So now they're making perfectly healthy blood cells again. His whole idea was to go after things like cystic fibrosis. You were born with cystic fibrosis? Come here. Thap, thap. Let's just inject you.
Yeah.
And now you don't have cystic fibrosis anymore, which, you know, kind of is not, it's a little closer to, what do we have, Retinox 5.
Well, first I was going to say, there's gene therapy happening today that
yes.
uses viruses and phages as delivery methods.
Right. And that's...
which is pretty cool.
It is. The main hookup for him was, hang up for him was, yeah, we got a great delivery system, targeting, not so good. If we just, you know, stick you in the arm and let it go, you can have brain cells making perfectly good blood. That's maybe not perhaps what we were aiming for.
That's why you have to find the right... That's why you have to find the right virus that targets the right cells.
Right. And that I find to be actually a really elegant solution, that they are already targeted for certain things. But, by the way, listeners, what I think is hysterical about Richard Mulligan's name is Dr. Richard Mulligan trying to give you a do-over. You know? I just thought that was hysterical. A little bit of life going. We also have a chiropractor in the area whose name is Dr. Bender. No kidding.
My dentist when I was a child was Dr. Brace Pentanay.
Okay. I can't get over Richard Mulligan without thinking of Empty Nest.
See, and then I just have to remember that he was dating Rachel Cox there for a while, who was a really hot porn star. But we've really digressed. So,
topic.
But yes, viruses and things like that. That is a credible way of perhaps doing it, because the virus doesn't necessarily have to make lots of copies of itself. It can go in there and do a whole lot of other nasty stuff.
Right.
If in theory it's complex enough, you know?
Sure.
Now, prions, did we ever come up with anything on that we found that to be credible? I think it's more, it's so unknown and there's so little known.
There's so little that we know about prions because...
I mean, there's snippets of protein that adhere.
Yeah, they're proteins that have somehow changed the way that they fold in a three-dimensional way. And we have no idea why they've changed, or when they changed, or
where they're from.
I think we have a fairly
them.
Good idea of how they're transmitted, but
well, we do know in the case of Kuru, I don't want to use the right the deer version of Jakob Creutzfeldt, also bovine encephalopathy. Mad cow disease, basically, and mad deer disease. These are all related because they are all prion diseases. You pretty much have to eat them.
Right.
You must ingest them.
But you can have them present in your body, and they just sit there
or
dormant.
Or get digested.
Yeah, they just sit there dormant, and you wouldn't know, and then all of a sudden they just decide.
Just starts switching your brain.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is common in all these. If you eat the brain of an infected human...
Yes.
Either Jakob's Creutzfeldt or Kuru, that's how you get it. Are you never necessarily going to get it? No. That's why we have lots of people in New Guinea. Hey, they're the ones eating people, or were. I don't think they are anymore. I want to say probably not.
Yeah. So I think what we decided is prions are just weird. We don't really know. I mean, sure. Maybe they could
code
make...
for anything.
Maybe... Well, no. I mean, they're just proteins that are... mutated somehow, and we don't know why or how or why they do what they do or how. I mean, it doesn't even seem to be self-interest.
Yeah, or self-replicating. Oh, look, we have prions. Weird.
Yeah.
We didn't even put maybe. I think we just kind of said...
So feasibly that could be a way of making a mutant because we just don't understand.
Yeah. I'm going to go with viruses. We do have written on here new universes. How you would tell that the physics are the same. How would you tell the physics are the same there, Dr. Rachel?
When you travel to a new universe, you want to know if the physics there are the same. Well, if you don't explode and die.
The physics are
probably the same as where you came from.
That was pretty much my thought. You're breathing. You're noticing you're in a new universe. bet in the physics, if they're not identical, they're so close to be indistinguishable.
They would have to be pretty identical. I mean, one, you notice differences in atmospheric pressure and all of that, so...
That was my thought. You know, if suddenly air doesn't flow very well, it crystallizes.
Right, you are going to have a lot of trouble breathing.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a real problem.
If you are standing on the ground and you're not sinking down into the dirt or floating 3 inches above the surface.
See, now that one I'm going to give to the local gravity could be different. That could still be. But I'm saying things like, yeah, oxygen now crystallizes at room temperature. That's a problem.
Yes.
Not really what it does here, you know?
Which means that anytime a character in a sci-fi movie or TV show travels to a new universe, the physics are exactly the same as ours.
Yeah, pretty much. It can be assumed.
Right.
There's a book series that I really, really like. It's the Ganilar Cycle. Guy's on a boat, looks up, hey, what's that meteor? Boom. Wakes up. He's in a desert land, not feeling hot and sick. There wasn't a bearded man. Yeah, okay, that's a shout-out to a sci-fi Felker. It's a good song. In any case, but he wakes up, and here's this saber-toothed tiger coming towards him, and he's like,
trouble.
That's bad. And then he kind of gets up, and the saber-toothed tiger seems to know him, and they seem to be friendly, and he's not quite figuring this out. Well, then he's like, huh, a lot of clouds in the sky. It's real warm. And now he's starting to get remnants of the language, because it seems he's been transplanted into somebody else's body. His mind has, anyways, because he kind of feels his teeth with his tongue and realizes that whatever species he's now part of doesn't have canines. They have tusks. It's a little wider.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it brought up questions like, relative to a human, how tall is this? How strong are they? Do they drink? You know, they can call this substance water, but is it actually water?
Well, how is he supposed to know how tall he is or strong he is when all he has to compare to is a saber-toothed tiger, which he's never met in his ordinary life?
Exactly, and this could be a whole new universe. I'm not going to spoil it for your readers. It's actually, they do reveal exactly where he is. It's a very good series. It's seven books long. Vicky and Hedren and Randall Garrett, although he died during the writing of the seventh book. They were married, but it's a really good series, and I do recommend you read it. It's the Gandalara Cycle, and it's pretty phonetic, but yeah, it is an excellent question. If you have your own body, you know the physics are the same. If you don't, could be anything, and you work with what you got.
Right.
So, you know, as it's a relatively common tropism, as we talked about in other shows, it's an excellent question. From a science point of view, it's kind of fascinating. But that's also one of the reasons why Doctor Who would whip out that yo-yo, checking gravity. He just needs to know what the local is.
Sure.
You know? Although I don't know that would necessarily be a great way to tell. I can think of other ones. I mean, you know about
how... to check gravity?
Yeah. I was actually thinking a rubber ball. You know about how not only how fast it's going to hit the ground, but also how far up it's going to come.
But that's going to deflate over time.
No, I'm talking about the hard rubber balls, like a super ball.
Yeah, sure.
You know about how that's going to react. And if it doesn't,
rubber's still going to degrade over time.
Well, you know, he's a Time Lord. He just doesn't have to.
But a yo-yo is tethered to you. So you can't lose it.
True. But it also...
The yo-yo string force
is going to be independent of gravity and how it works.
Right. That's if you're doing it right, then
yeah.
Gravity shouldn't have too much effect on it.
Which brings us to friction. And we did come up with what we thought was the best possible armor you ever could.
You thought it was the best possible armor. I thought it would be,
yeah. Frictional coefficient armor, where it has a frictional coefficient of 0. Everything just slides right off of you. Anything but a direct hit. And I do mean direct. With that kind of frictional coefficient, you would have to have a dead 90-degree perpendicular for anything to not slide. Because it would tend to otherwise.
Yes.
And, you know, that would be enough. I think that would be cool. Now, how you would walk or grab things or, you know...
Right, that would be... I think you wanted it to be paper thin, so it would be light and flexible.
Well, I don't know, because, I mean, you still have some force being translated through it. I don't think paper thin would work. I think this is what we got into the last time.
Yes, exactly, because so I said it would be too fragile, and you could just tear it, and it wouldn't protect against a blunt attack. So someone could just come up and punch you in the
Yes, but their throat. Fist would slide off. Oh, wow, that was really cool. Dude, let me do it again. You know what? We need to test this theory. I think we need...
No substance that has zero...
Teflon, if it's done right, gets darn close. I think we should do this. First, we need an experimental subject. I suggest we use Kosh. He'll be our new Timmy.
Okay.
Kosh, how do you feel about being the new Timmy?
We need a new Timmy.
Sounds of explosions here.
Sorry, wrong Timmy.
All right, and then we get down to... Oh, we've got our final topic, actually, which really came to be quite... It's less science fiction-y, although it kind of fits in that same area, because as far as both of us are concerned, most of the people who are on...
Are you talking about what I think you're talking about?
Yeah. It's not creationism, which makes sense, by the way. Yeah, I know. On a science show or a science fiction show, you hear creationism being said, it makes sense. It's a valid theory. It can't be disproven. So you can't, because you can't disprove it, you have to leave it there. Now, does that necessarily mean it's the right one? No, it's just one of many we cannot disprove. It's not absolute. Below a certain level, if you can't directly observe it, it could simply be the will of God. Me, I'm betting on atoms. I'm betting on electrons. But you have to admit it could be. However, the folks that keep saying, no, life must have been here because of thermodynamics. Yeah, one of the all-time worst theories I've ever heard. And these are real science types in some cases that are doing this. And it's like, dude, have you checked your math? Really?
Explain.
Basically, what the argument goes that we could not have life as complex as we do, because it's simply too complex for any of the individual pieces to have come together. That because of the law of thermodynamics, it's simply too high an activation energy, essentially. And yeah, that look on your face. That's what most science types who aren't trying to replace science with mythology are, you know, that's the look they get. Either that or, really, does this person still have a job?
The whole concept of evolution is that random changes happen and the ones that are advantageous survive.
Well, and I did have somebody who at one point told me they didn't believe in the theory of evolution. Well, first of all, it's not a theory the way you'd use it in English, or common English. It's a theory in the same way you'd use it in science vocabulary. Right. Sort of like the reasonable person in English means something different than it does in legal terms. Mm. They are very different.
Yes.
And that's where you get stuff like that. Theory in science does mean something quite different.
It means something very specific, yes.
Yes. However, putting that aside, the theory of evolution is not something that can be argued with. It can be proven over and over again in the space of a day. As applied to humans, now you can say you don't believe in it. Because that's Darwinism.
Right.
He was confusing his terms. And after a while, I think he was just screwing with my head or trying to. And I still was going, dude, seriously, use the right terms. You're a responsible human being. It really annoys me, among other things, when people who are in a position of authority, even if it's intellectual authority, use the wrong terms. And I don't mean like you goofed. Oops, left my mouth. I meant to say Paul Revere, and I really said George Washington. You know, we make mistakes.
Sure.
Listen to the show. but when you're regularly doing it, like an anthropologist regularly talking about the different races of people, I just want to throttle them. The biologists proved a long time ago we are a human race. If you want to use a correct term, it would be breed, which people don't like.
Right, because it sounds like we're not animals. Referring to us as a dog or a pet.
We're not animals. Oh, wait. Biology proved even longer ago that we are
animals.
So breed is perfectly acceptable. Eskimos, hate to tell you this, folks, are fundamentally different than other human beings. Not so much that they can't breed, but there are certain very physiological differences that go below the skin. I'm referring specifically to they tend to have larger livers. Yes. And by Eskimos, I'm using that in the Algonquin term, meaning people who live above us. It's the Inuit, but there's a couple other tribes that are in there, and I'm including all of them.
Yes.
A lot of them have that adaptation. People don't know why, but it's there. It is transmissible to the young. It is an actual specific adaptation, but it does make you different on an autopsy table.
Yes.
So yeah, but along those lines, yeah, we're kind of verging off what we were talking about, which
what
is
are we talking about?
Yeah, it's basically that first a cell, you know, while you could have gotten a cell wall, you know, that could have evolved. All that different machinery happened to be in that cell wall was just too complex for it to happen randomly. Couldn't happen. That's the theory, because thermodynamics, there's so many reactions that would have had to have happened at a low enough temperature
to create human beings,
create life of any type, and human beings being even more complex than a bacteria, which again, not so true. It's more we're a collection of systems, but our individual cells, a lot of them are a lot less complex. Actually, blood cells don't have a lot going for them. They don't replicate on their own. Bone cells, really more constructs than cells at that point.
Fair enough.
You know? But they, basically, they were saying this couldn't all come together. That they're just, it's simply too complex. Which, they don't really give a good reason other than thermodynamics. Second law of thermodynamics. I'm going, really? Entropy, you want to go that route? Not so much.
Given enough time.
And enough different reactions.
Yeah, very improbable things will happen.
As water used to cover most of the planet at one time, we were very dry, and then we were almost all water, with a lot of proteins in the soup. You know, and enough of them got together.
Right.
You know, they worked out. Now, how that, quote, miracle of life happened, that's an excellent question. I mean, there's a joke that I really like, and I think it's very funny. A bunch of scientists sitting around going, hey, we don't need God. Tell him he's done. Junior scientist, you go tell him. Well, why don't you guys? Well, because we're not junior. Okay. So he goes up to God, and he says, God, I'm here representing all the scientists. And God says, all right, I'm listening. And the junior scientist says, you know what? We think you're obsolete. We don't need you anymore. You don't exist. Get out. We can do anything you can do. Really? Okay, says God. We'll have a little contest. We're gonna go. You need to make a human being or make life from the same thing I did. The junior scientist reaches down, grabs a handful of stuff underneath him, and says, "Okay." And then God says, "Ah, you make your own dirt. You know, basically make your own universe." It's a valid point, despite the fact that we as human beings can now put together from scratch a bacteria or even something more complex. We can create the mitochondria. We can create the DNA. We can create all the organelles. We can create the cell wall. We can't make it live. It's not live. Why? We don't know. But we can't do it, despite the fact that we can put the car together, because that's functionally what it comes down to at that point. Mechanically, it works. But why won't it go? And, you know, it's an interesting point. Why can't we? Yeah, in my opinion, I think it's because life and the soul or anything else like that is not electromagnetic in nature. All of our tests for anything are based on electromagnetism. So we can't detect that yet. Comments from Dr. Rachel as she's like,
So are you suggesting that a mitochondria has a soul?
I'm suggesting there's a different type of energy that may, and souls would be attributable to that. Personally, I think there is. However, I will admit, based on science and all my scientific training, I can't prove it. I have testimonial evidence, my own, that of things that I've seen or experienced that okay, this fits what I understand a soul to be. It is not explainable any other way that I know of.
Okay.
However, as I cannot reproduce this in any way, shape, or form,
right?
You know, it's scientifically invalid. And I accept that and understand it. So my own personal beliefs versus what I can prove.
Right. Well, that's the difference between belief and data. I mean, faith versus I don't know, logic.
Health food store marketing versus actual FDA approval.
Yes. Don't get me started.
What, you don't want to pay for very expensive urine?
No, I do not.
But at one point, we did have a discussion on our own of how can somebody be a top-notch level scientist of any type, physicist, biologist, chemist, you know, anything like that, and still believe in God? And to me, this is a fairly easy explanation. God is why it happened. And I'm not saying necessarily this is my belief, but I can understand it. God is why it happened. God's the impetus behind it. The math, the equations, everything that we've been able to prove, the background, the temperature, the background radiation in the universe, that's what we can see. That's how, what we can observe, as we are not ourselves godlike, much as I might, you know, dispute that fact at a bar and single women. You know, we are not ourselves godlike in that capacity. And so we're simply going to describe what we can see, what we can experience, what we can understand. When we understand enough, maybe then God will have somebody else to talk to. But in the meantime, you know, the motives are unknown. The exact mechanisms are unknown. But we're here now. We got to admit that. You know, as to why we're necessarily here, if God makes you feel good, that's a good explanation. Can't be ruled out, because we can neither prove nor disprove, which is another interesting scientific thing I've had in an astronomy professor. I don't think he was an astrophysicist, but he might have been. He might have just been a physicist. But in any case, his point, he gave the reasoning of why astrology cannot possibly be accurate, couldn't work at all, is because back in the 1900s, or actually I think it was around 1930, the Astronomical Society reclassified the zodiac, and now we have 13 constellations, now including the serpent. And because astrology didn't keep up with that, well, it must be all crap. Huh?
Wasn't that actually just a different zodiac, though?
No, it's the same one. They just added, they added the serpent in there. They split the sky up into 13 quadrants instead of 12.
Okay.
Because they're all the same ones.
Right.
And so I'm like, yeah, great reasoning there, dude.
Wait, because what didn't catch up?
Because astrology didn't include the new constellation, it must be crap. It's completely invalid. Yeah. It's sort of like saying Pluto's not a planet because we say so. Oh, wait, we addressed that already. So, anything lately making you nuts, Dr. Rachel? I mean, as far as in...
No, I've been steering clear of science fiction that tries to explain itself with actual science.
Nothing on Lost Girl that's making you go nuts?
No.
In the bad way?
I like Lost Girl.
I love Lost Girl.
But, you know, there's their miracle exception. Magic!
Right.
And we're good.
Right.
That would be another one of those. Doesn't interact with electromagnetism. We don't know how it works. But good enough. It follows its own rules. It's internally consistent.
Yeah.
I think that's really pretty much what I really want for my fantasy and science fiction.
Yes. Just, give me... Just say, this is... a different, you know, create a new universe, not in the sense that we were talking about a new universe with different physics before, but just create a new fictional world where magic exists, or, you know, mutants exist, or whatever, and just work with that and stay in that
consistency in that tends to make us all much happier.
Exactly.
Also tends to make better stories, because if they end the series with, oh, you're not actually Fae, you're aliens...
Right,
and
that's gonna that would
yeah, it's gonna piss me off. I'm not gonna lie.
Not aliens, extra dimensional beings.
Okay, we're not talking about when we all saw Indiana Jones raped in front of us. Yes, South Park, we love you. And thank you for saying what we are all thinking. What? I gotta say, what was he thinking, honestly? I mean, it's George Lucas. Most people like to go, well, Hollywood got involved. No, it's George Lucas. He is the power player.
Yeah, but he's
it's like somebody trying to push around Steven Spielberg. You're going to do it our way. Yeah, okay, good luck with that.
But he had his own, his one story idea, which was Star Wars, and that's where he should have stayed. Now he tries to tell more stories, and they all end up being bad. Let's save this for the gravity well.
All right, jumpers. I hope you've had fun. We've had fun having Dr. Rachel here.
I've had a lot of fun discussing the real science of science fiction.
And next time, we're going to be taking us back to the good old familiar ground of fiction that we've been doing for 23 episodes before this. Next episode, we might have a new special guest here in the terminal. That's still uncertain. It's undecided. But we should have Dr. Rachel back one more time for this one. And Raven and I will still be here as well. Next episode, we are going to be having a nice in-depth discussion about Orson Scott Card's 1985 novel, Ender's Game, considered a science fiction classic. That's for next week. We got Ender's Game coming up. We already know our mini feature is going to be a little bit about the Hunger Games. By the time this episode comes out, the movie adaptation of the Hunger Games is going to be kind of old news. That's going to have been out for quite a while. So we're a little bit late to the game, but
hey. But it's good stuff. Well, we're late talking about it. We weren't late seeing it. It's an excellent movie. And we'll chat about that then.
So, from all of us here at the terminal, come back in a couple days and check us out in the Gravity Well, where we talk about whatever we decide to talk about. I know that George Lucas is going to be in the conversation. So come back in a couple days and listen to that. And we will see you guys next time around. Through the jump gate. Thanks a lot.
Visit the terminal at www.throughthejumpgate.wordpress.com. Leave comments or email us at jumpgate.podcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at jumpgatepodcast and subscribe to the show on iTunes. Reviews are always welcome.
The jump gate is closing.
Go back to your pocket dimension now.